Hello and welcome to Paranormal or What podcast with me, your host, Michaela Ford. Hi everybody, how are you doing this week, paranormal peeps? I'm okay, but it's been really, really busy this week. And sadly, I can't bring the episode that I wanted to bring you because of the person that I was going to interview couldn't do the interview this week, unfortunately. So I am dragging up one of my best old episodes for you. And it's an episode with Darren Marlar from Weird Darkness, who was one of the first people that I interviewed on the show. And it's a really good interview and he's a very interesting chap. So I hope you'll enjoy that. Also, I've included on the show me retelling one of my most spooky and strange incidents in my house. There were two different incidents. I have a lot of jots in my house. Just one of those things, if you've heard the previous episode on jots. And that's when things go missing in your house and you can't explain it. And then mysteriously, often they just turn up either in the same place or in a different place. And it absolutely drives you crazy. Well, I had two of those that were quite incredible. And one I named Slippergate. And the other one I named Facecloth-gate. And so I will tell you all about those. So you still have a good amount of very interesting content to listen to. So sit back, get yourself a tot of something hot and spicy and enjoy the weirdness in my house, followed by the weirdness of Weird Darkness with Darren Marlar. Enjoy. Here are two of my most important vanishing item episodes. In fact, I believe that these are the episodes where I actually caught out the entity responsible for removing my things. See what you think. Sunday, 4th of October, 2020. I have a benign entity in my house. I don't know whether it came with the house or followed me here. Once, many years ago, I was told by a psychic that I'm guided by the spirit of my great-grandmother Josephine, whose photograph I have in my living room, right in front of me now, and who I talk to on a regular basis. She never answers, just sits there looking at me kindly. Sometimes I imagine that her expression changes depending on what I ask her. On occasion, I swear I've seen her wink. Anyway, I digress. This benign entity tricks me and helps me in equal measure. I don't know whether it is my relative or something else in the house. Sometimes if I've lost something, I'll call out and ask it to help me to find it. Sure enough, sometime later, I find it randomly, or it will appear in a place I've already looked. Mostly. We never found my husband's share certificates, and ended up having to order new ones, so it didn't work that time. Sometimes, though, things disappear right from under my nose and reappear in the exact same place, after I've turned the house upside down looking for them. In fact, it also happened to my husband this week, when he put down his vapour on the table, walked away, came back to get it, it wasn't there. He then went searching around the house, came back, and it was on the table, and he said, "That wasn't there when I looked earlier. It absolutely wasn't there." But I don't know whether he's coming round to my way of thinking or not. He's definitely a sceptic, but I did sense a bit of a wobble in his belief there. So, anyway, here are two instances that spring to mind where I have absolutely caught out the entity that has been taking things and hiding them. So, the first one is the case of the missing slippers. Now, this really freaked me out. Okay, are you ready? It was during the day and I was getting ready to go out. I took off my slippers in the bedroom and then went for a shower. Afterwards, I walked back into the bedroom and went to put my slippers on as I needed to get something from downstairs. They weren't there. Now, what usually happens in this situation is that I immediately presume that I've mislaid the item I can't find. This time was no different. I marched to and from the bathroom several times looking for my slippers. Then, starting to doubt my sanity, I looked in the other two bedrooms and even went downstairs to look for them. Still no sign of them. By now I was pretty annoyed with myself. I was grumbling and mumbling to myself about how it was ridiculous to lose a pair of slippers when you've only just had them on. Finally, I stamped backwards and forwards between the bathroom again. And when I got to my bedroom, I was shouting out to the ether to please help me find my slippers. On my next frantic journey back from the bathroom towards the bedroom, I spotted something that took my breath away. I stopped dead in my tracks. There, in the doorway of my bedroom, perfectly placed next to each other, were my slippers. Where did they come from? It would have been physically impossible for me to walk over them a dozen times and not notice them or not accidentally kick them over. They hadn't been there. And yet here they were, right in front of me. I shouted, "Thank you," and stood perplexed for a very long time. Was I losing my mind? Despite knowing that they hadn't been in the doorway, I still doubted myself. Could I have been wrong? Could I have walked over them all those times? However, the next vanishing item incident, I had no doubt whatsoever that I was right. Which leads us to case two, the case of the missing face cloth. For any of our friends in the USA, British people often use a small toweling cloth to wash their faces, which we imaginatively call a face cloth. I don't know if you have such a thing in the USA, so I thought it would be best to explain in order to avoid any confusion. On this particular day, I had taken out a clean face cloth from the laundry cupboard and put it on the side of the bathroom sink for use later. Next to the bathroom sink is the family wash basket, which has a wicker lid. I describe these seemingly banal details because they're important to the story. The thing I've noticed about these vanishing items cases is that they usually happen when you're not really taking notice of the things you end up losing. A dropped set of keys here, a pair of slippers there. So when the item goes missing, you either blame yourself for misplacing them or simply think you've forgotten where you put them. Therefore, you're never entirely sure whether it's your fault or something else playing tricks on you. This time, though, I knew it wasn't me. So, imagine the scenario. I walk into the bathroom and see the face cloth on the side of the sink. I use the lavatory and go to wash my hands. The face cloth is no longer on the side of the sink. I'm puzzled. I look all around the sink, on the floor, and on the top of the wash basket. I know it was there. Convinced it must be nearby, I then pull out the wash basket and check behind it, and finally empty out the wash basket, convinced the face cloth must have accidentally fallen into it. Still no face cloth. Feeling very confused and beginning to doubt my sanity, as usual, I turn and walk across the bathroom, open the laundry cupboard and take out another clean face cloth. I shut the cupboard door, turn around and look in disbelief. The face cloth is back on the sink. There, folded up where it was, innocuous and minding its own business as if nothing had happened. Initially, I'm speechless. Then, jubilant. Aha! I shouted. I caught you. I know that face cloth wasn't there. I know it for a fact. You're rumbled. I may have looked like a raving madwoman, but I was so excited to have proof that it disappeared and came back. This time, there was absolute proof. I knew it was there, then it wasn't there. I turned round, came back, and then it reappeared. I have no explanation for this phenomena. All I know is that it's intelligent and it does these things on purpose. If it was a glitch in time, surely more than a simple face cloth would move. Possibly a whole room or a whole scene, not just one item within a house. Where does it go? Does it go into a different dimension? A different universe? Parallel universe? Just disappears? The atoms are spread out and then rebuilt? I don't know. What do you think? Something feels like it's playing tricks on me. Maybe my ancestor? A friendly spirit? A fairy? An elf? I don't know, but something's happening. And I know because I caught it out. I saw what happened. I didn't doubt myself. But what is it? Do you have an explanation?
Hello and welcome, Darren.
Hey, Michelle. I'm doing really well. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. I'm really looking forward to our chat this evening.
Well, thank you for having me here. Most people don't want to talk to me.
Oh, I can't believe that.
Oh, no, I have no friends. My relatives have cut me off. No, I'm just kidding. No, but yeah. I've been looking forward to this. And let's get started.
Okay. So my first question is, Darren, how long have you been interested in the paranormal and what made you interested in it?
I've actually been sort of interested all my life, but not in the way that many most people are. My birthday is November 1st, so it's the day after Halloween. So I've always celebrated my birthday surrounded by all of this dark imagery. And I think that's probably what got me started with liking that kind of material, that genre. And I found myself watching scary movies as a kid. And when I go to the school library, I'd be looking for the books on ghosts and monsters and stuff like that. So really it started even way back before I even went to grade school. I remember my dad taking me, one of my favorite memories with my dad is a Halloween. And we went down the street trick-or-treating. And one of the houses was just decked out, just so cool. For Halloween. But back then, I didn't think it was cool. I thought it was terrifying. And I'm dressed, and we go up there to do the trick-or-treating, but I could not bring myself to go up to the door. I was that scared. They even had a guy out there in their driveway dressed as a werewolf running back and forth, scaring the kids. And I just couldn't do it. So I walked away. And my dad could see how disappointed I was, first because I couldn't get the candy, but also because I didn't like being scared. I was kind of ashamed of it. He turned me back around and he said, "You go up there and you just give them the biggest roar you possibly can. I can guarantee you they're going to back down." Well, I'm dressed as Mickey Mouse, so it's not really the scariest creature in the world. But I took my dad's advice. I went up there and they could see what my dad was trying to do. So when I walked up, I knocked on the door. I said, trick or treat. And then I just gave them this big giant roar. And the people who were dressed ugly, like vampires and werewolves, they all acted scared to death, ran away. It was one of the best things ever. And I think since then, I think that's really when it started solidifying in me. And I must have been like maybe 4 years old, but I still remember that because it was just such a great memory.
Oh, fantastic. Well, your interest really comes through on your podcast. Can you tell us a bit about your career in broadcasting pre-podcasts, please?
Yeah, and I have been in broadcasting before podcasting began. So yeah, pre-podcast is a great way of saying it. I started in radio back in 1990, and I've been working in full-time radio ever since. And ironically, and I know you'll probably get back to this later when it comes to religion and faith, but it was a Christian radio station that I started working for. And I have been working in Christian radio ever since 1990 full-time. I'm still employed with a Christian radio station in Chicago. That's how the pre-podcasting got started. I was already doing voiceover stuff for our commercial clients. And, you know, we try to create skits to play on the radio. And so you got to try to figure out different voices you could use and stuff like that. And I think that was the beginning of I've always liked audio because I was actually a singer in high school. And so I already had this passion for audio and stuff like that, but radio really kind of gave me that voice acting bit, that tinge, I guess, for lack of better words. And I couldn't let go. And so even later on, when I started doing some acting in independent films and stuff like that, I was always saying, hey, if you just need a voice guy for like an off-screen something, let me know, or I'll be your movie trailer guy for when you create your movie and you need a promo. I'll be the, in a world where one man, I'll be that guy for you. And I still do it today. I love doing voiceover stuff. And yeah, it started way back in 1990 is when I got my first dose of it.
Fantastic. Have you done much voiceover guy type work? I can really see you being on a trailer for a film.
I've done a lot of that. Unfortunately, it's not anything that ever hit Hollywood. It's nothing that you will not hear me on any of the big budget movies. But a lot of independent films do come to me. I don't have to approach them anymore. They actually find me online and say, hey, would you be willing to do this for us? And that's just one thing of a lot of stuff that I do. But that is one of the things that I find most fun when it comes to voiceovers. And yeah, I do a lot of that for independent films. A lot of video game people who are creating games, they want a movie trailer sound to launch it, try to get at the hype on it. I've done quite a few projects for people who are doing a Kickstarter campaign. And they want that, again, they want that Don LaFontaine voice. And I can't do nobody does Don LaFontaine like Don LaFontaine, but I do what I can. And since Don LaFontaine is no longer with us, God rest his soul, since I don't have to feel like I'm trying to take jobs from him. Not that I would ever have a chance, but now I don't have to feel guilty about trying to be Don LaFontaine. No, but it's a lot of fun, and that's kind of the stuff. Sometimes just a company will be having a retreat, and they just want to make it fun for all of their coworkers, employees, or their clients if they're doing something for their clients, and they come to me for that kind of stuff as well, and it's a lot of fun. If I'm not doing movie trailer guy, then I'm doing a Sam Elliott style, or I'm doing the Super Friends narrator, or you know, stuff like that. I do a Disney promo style, Walt Disney presents, you know, trying to get the old 80s animated Disney cartoon promo style. I do a lot of that and it's a lot of fun, but yeah, the movie trailer guy is probably my favorite.
I think you could give John a good run for his money. So what made you decide to give podcasting a try?
Well, it actually kind of went along with the radio thing. When podcasting, I think I started it even before podcasting was a thing. I started recording my show, my radio show, and cutting out all the music because you can't put that online because of due to copyright reasons. Not that that stops people from doing it, but at the time I actually was trying to follow the law. But I would cut all of that out, but I would keep all of the bits and the jokes and everything else that I had done in my show, because I did a very personality intensive radio show. And I would record that and I'd put it up on my website, which I created specifically for the radio show. And I just started telling people on the air that, hey, if you missed part of the show and you want to hear it, you can go check out my website at darrenmarlar.com or I think it was marlarinthemorning.com, I think is what it was. And you know, you can go check it out and hear whatever you missed. And that was really before podcasting may have existed, but it hadn't really taken off. I didn't know about it, at least. But when podcasting did come around, it was just natural for me to just move it to that. So that way I wasn't taking up all of that space on my own heart, on my own server, with all of the audio files and stuff like that. And shortly after that, I started doing something called the Daily Dose of Weird News, which again is just sort of a comedy type of thing, because I'm very much comedy oriented, which I know doesn't really come across in the podcast for Weird Darkness, but it started off as a comedy podcast, started a YouTube channel for Daily Dose of Weird News. And that was also part of my radio show. So everything came out of the radio show that I thought, maybe I can make that a podcast. It wasn't until recently, like in the last, since Weird Darkness, actually. It wasn't until I started trying out Weird Darkness back in 2015 that I created something that was not originally based on the radio show. It was something brand new. So I've been doing it for a long time. I didn't know that I was doing podcasting at the time, but that's essentially what it turned into.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did you immediately know you wanted to do paranormal themed podcasts, or did you have to think about it beforehand? Was it an obvious thing to you?
No, like I mentioned, it started with the radio show recordings and the Daily Dose of Weird News. Those weren't really taking off. People weren't gravitating towards it. And that was YouTube anyway, but I was still doing a podcast at the same time. Yeah. And I was watching a YouTube channel by somebody. I want to say it's Haunting Stories. I'm not even sure he's doing his YouTube channel anymore. But I have no idea how I stumbled across it, but I did. And essentially he was telling kind of like what I do in Weird Darkness. He was just going in there and telling stories about ghosts and goblins and everything else, which of course you find tons of on podcasts and YouTube now. There are so many people doing it, but I didn't know that at the time. He was just one of the first ones I was exposed to.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? That's interesting. I think maybe I could try that. You know, I kind of like that material. You know, I've always had a fondness for the dark and macabre, and I like doing voice work. So maybe I could bring my storytelling ability to it. And I just tried it just to see. I did one episode, I called it Weird Darkness because I was planning on making this culmination. So since I started with Weird News, I wanted something weird. Everything was weird. I was already calling people weirdos and stuff like that. And I wanted somehow for the paranormal to go into weird. And I eventually came up with Weird Darkness. That's the reason. It's sort of an odd name, but people seem to gravitate towards it. But that's where it came from. It was actually a sort of a sister podcast from Daily Dose of Weird News, which no longer exists. But anyway, I just tried one episode to see what it was like. And I really liked it. I thought it was kind of fun. I needed something to get my creative rocks off, because I was working at a radio station that, even though I loved the company that I was working for, it wasn't a creative outlet. There wasn't anything like me doing an actual radio show. I wasn't in the production room creating commercials and having fun in there. I was pretty much just a board operator. So I needed something creative, a sort of a creative outlet. And that's the reason I even tried this. And it got a really good response on YouTube, enough that I thought it was worth continuing. It's not remotely remotely what other YouTube channels get, but it was just a little bit, just enough for some encouragement. But I thought, you know what, I'll give this a try for a little while and see how it goes. And eventually I moved away from doing the YouTube thing with videos because it was just so time consuming. And I'm really not a video guy. I'm really an audio guy. So that also allows me to do more episodes per week if I'm not spending all of that time trying to create a video. So I actually thought that's going to be a little bit better for me. I like doing the audio. I can do it more often. If I just do the podcast, I'll throw the audio up on YouTube, but I'm not actually creating any actual videos. And it worked from there. And it's just grown a little bit by a little bit. And suddenly the last couple of years, it's exploded.
Yeah. The first few years that I listened to your podcast, you were just doing two episodes a week, I think. And now you've blossomed into 7 days a week. How do you manage it?
Well, first, thank you so much for sticking it out that long that you actually remember when I was doing two episodes a week. You have been with me for a long time. Wow. Michaela. That was pretty much the way, the easiest way for me to do it was to drop the YouTube. My wife and I, or my bride, which I like to call her, my bride and I were having our 25th wedding anniversary and we were in Tampa celebrating, but I also used it as an opportunity to step away from everything that I was doing creatively and just take like a couple of weeks and think about what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. And I realized that I really didn't enjoy doing the YouTube. It was a couple of days a week. Yes, you were right. I think it was either 2 or 3 days a week, depending on what I could do, especially with the health problems that I was having at the time with migraines and stuff like that. It was really hard to concentrate on doing videos and stuff. And I realized I don't really like doing that. I love doing the audio part, but then I get to this point where I dread the rest of the process just to post it online. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just go back to a podcast, just the podcast. And if I like it, I'll just do more. You know, I'll just do one every day or however often I want to do it. And the more I got into that, the more I stepped away from YouTube and started doing just the podcast, the more I loved doing the podcast. I actually sort of flamed within me something that I already loved. And so for me, it wasn't a chore to go in and create another episode every day. And I'm in a very unique position. People ask me kind of like what you just did, how do you do it for, you know, something every single day? I work from home. I'm a full-time voice artist and podcaster. I do work for a radio station, but I do that from home. I'm in front of this microphone all day long. The computer and the microphone are with me all the time. As soon as I have all of my other work done, I just immediately start working on another episode. So it's a labor of love because you do not, unless you're Joe Rogan or somebody, you do not get rich doing podcasting, but you do it because you enjoy it. And I still do. And I enjoy doing it more and more every day. So doing 7 episodes a week really isn't that big of a deal. I will, however, say that the weekends are archive episodes. So I do cheat a little bit. You got to give yourself a day off here and then. Yeah. So on the weekends, I'll post a couple of archive episodes on Saturday and then another couple on Sunday just to give people, because so many people are new to the podcast and I'm pulling stuff back from 2016, 2017, 2018 that they've probably never heard. And for those who have heard it, like yourself, most of them are saying, hey, it's kind of cool to hear some of these old stories and the way you used to do this and all the old sound effects that you don't use anymore. It's kind of a neat little walk down memory lane.
It is, definitely.
So that's the reason I do that.
So I'm interested, actually. What does a typical weekday day look like for you?
There really isn't a typical day. Every day is a little bit different for me. I tend to sleep late, again, because I work from home, so I get to make my own hours. I'm trying to change that, though, because it irritates the crap out of my bride, because she likes to get up early. But I'll sleep in until like around noon or so. I'll grab something to eat, and I'll wander into the studio around 1 or 2 o'clock, and I'll start sorting through the emails that I've received. And I get a lot of emails, not just from listeners, which I love, by the way. Please keep them coming. But I also get a lot of newsletters from different websites that I might consider for stories, and a lot of also other emails for radio stuff or voiceover stuff like that. So I start sorting through all of my emails, and that usually takes me a good couple of hours because I get so much overnight and through the morning. Once I get done with that, I start crafting that day's episode. Most people think that I'm crafting an episode for a few days ahead. I wish I was that organized. I'm not. In fact, as you and I are talking right now, I'm still in the middle of creating tonight's episode, and I have no idea what all the stories are going to be yet. But I will soon. But that's pretty much my day. So I'll start crafting. I'll craft the episode. I know I need about 12 pages or so if I want a 1 hour length. And once I get that much material, I start organizing it as to what order I want to put it in, and start writing up the little teases to say, hey, coming up, you know, this is going to happen and you might want to stay tuned for that. And then I actually do the audio portion. The audio portion, of course, is the most fun. For me, at least. Once I do that, I have to go back and edit all of my mistakes, which are a lot. I know that I'm a professional voiceover artist, but that does not mean that I am full of mistakes. So I go in, and that takes me a good while. If I record for an hour, it'll probably take me about 20 minutes or so to skim through and find all the edits and remove those. Once I do that, then I go right back in, process it to make sure that all the levels are consistent. So all of the low levels, like of me whispering this, it's actually loud enough that you're going to hear it. So it's called normalization. I do that. And then I start putting in the sound effects and the music and everything else. And the whole process of putting together an episode probably takes between 6 and 8 hours for one episode. So I do treat it as a full-time job.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm usually getting it done like right before midnight or even afterwards, which is fine for most episodes. But when I'm doing something for Thriller Thursday and it gets posted on Friday morning because I don't get it done in time, it makes me look like an idiot. But that's the way it is right now. So
I think your fans forgive you.
And that's when I just call it Friday Frights or something. You know, I just change the name of it because I know it's going to be late.
Do you have any of your own particular experiences or favorite stories that you'd like to share with us?
You know, I'm actually in the minority on that. Most everybody who listens, who has emailed me, they have their own experiences. Something has happened to them. I really don't. Nothing really has happened to me except for one occasion I had a bout with sleep paralysis. I've had it happen a couple of times, but I know that there are some medical or scientific explanations for it. So I wasn't really concerned about it, except for one night. It was several years ago, but I am convinced now that sleep paralysis in many cases is demonic in some way. When I had my sleep paralysis, it's like most people have said, you're wide awake, but you can't move. The only thing you can move are your eyeballs looking around the room. It is so realistic. You just know that you're awake. This is not a dream. And I had the biggest sense of evil come over me and loom over me, which again is something that most people that's the way people describe it for themselves as well. That old hag syndrome. I mean, it's not necessarily an old hag, but there is something evil, ugly, demonic, whatever, looming over you. And for me, I actually kind of remember, and I'm not sure if I'm remembering it correctly or if this is what my mind has created after the fact, but what I have in my head is this giant, almost a shadow figure, but not like a shadow man, not like the Hat Man. It was more of a large 400-pound demonic presence, no horns or anything like that. I don't even remember if it had eyes. If it did, it had red eyes, but I think that's just me just projecting that onto my memory. Mm-hmm. But the feeling of evil was so intense that the only thing I could do was just scream out, Jesus save me, Jesus save me, Jesus save me. Of course, I can't scream it because I'm paralyzed, but that's what's going on in my head. And that's the only thing that made it go away. And it wasn't that I woke up at that point because I was already awake, but suddenly I was free to move. And that has bothered me ever since. And I don't know why it happened to me. I don't know why it happens to anybody. But some sort of, I am convinced it's a demonic presence, not all the time with sleep paralysis, but in some cases like that, I don't see how it can't be. I think there really is a spiritual aspect to it.
Yeah.
That's the only paranormal thing or weird thing that's ever happened to me.
Right. And do you have a favorite area or genre of the paranormal that you're interested in, such as ghosts or cryptids, UFOs, or are you just happy to tell stories about all the different areas?
Scooby-Doo episodes. That's it. That's all I like.
Same as my kids.
I really like the cryptids. I think those are a lot of fun, even though I don't believe even half of them actually exist. I love reading about them.
Yeah.
Like my favorite are werewolves. And
yeah.
I also really like stories about the Mothman. That's one of my earlier memories of reading a book at school. When I, like I said earlier, when I'd go to the school library and pick out those strange books, one of the stories I remember is reading about the Mothman. And that was one of those things that actually kind of scared me in my mind because it was just so vivid in my head. So werewolves and Mothman, I kind of like those kind of cryptids type of things. I also like unsolved mysteries, even if those, even if they're really dark in nature. I don't know why, but I find them fascinating. But the reason that I put everything else into it, like true crime and legends and lore and stuff like that, conspiracies, I think most people who like the dark and strange in whatever genre are going to be more apt to like it in the other genres as well. I think just us people with dark, strange personalities are going to like dark, strange stuff. And we might have our favorites, like I just mentioned what my favorites are, but that doesn't mean that I don't like hearing about the other stuff once in a while too. And I've seen other podcasts and, well, at the time, other YouTube channels actually, that were doing just ghost stories, or they were doing just true crime stories. And I thought that's great for them, but I didn't want to be a carbon copy of what somebody else was already doing. So I thought, well, why not combine everything and do sort of an anthology type of situation with even each episode not necessarily being on just one subject. So once in a while, I will do a full hour on one topic, but most of the time you get 4, 5, 6 different stories that are a little bit of everything. So you'll get the monsters in one story, and then the very next story might be a conspiracy or a UFO story or whatever. And then the one right after that will be an unexplained murder or somebody disappeared in the Everglades, something like that. But it's always something a little bit different. I try to give something in each episode that people will like. They may not like every single story, but there'll be a story for them in there somewhere. And I think that's what's helped to make Weird Darkness stand out a little bit from the other podcasts.
Yeah, I think it's good not to be limited. As a podcast fan, I would say that when I look through a podcast, I see what piques my interest, and there might be one thing from an episode that piques my interest, and then I end up listening to the whole podcast. So it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm hoping people will do. Even if they don't like every story in that particular episode, if they like one story, I'm hoping they'll come back and listen to another episode, and that they'll like another story in that episode, and they'll just keep coming back. That's what as an entertainer, I want to please everybody. I know I can't, but it's always fun to try.
Yeah, and talking about different segments that you put into your podcast, you recently added a new segment called Retro Radio. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
I've always liked the golden age of radio, shows like The Whistler or The Shadow. But what really got me into it was, again, back in grade school. Now that I'm talking to you, all of this stuff happened in grade school for me. I need to go back in time and just go relive those years again. but I remember going to my dad took me to one of his friend's houses, and his friend had a daughter about my age, and she was there listening to a transistor radio. And even though this was in the late 70s, early 80s, they were playing the original Orson Welles War of the Worlds. And that caught my ear, and I thought, what is that? And I was mesmerized. I think that's also one of the reasons that I even pursued radio later on. It got me interested in again, the voice acting, the theater of the mind. What it was so cool. And so ever since then, I've kind of had a heart for it. And a few years later, I was able to start doing audio dramas with people. They would come to me and ask me to play a character in their audio drama, very much like the old style of old time radio shows. And that gave me even more of an appreciation of what those people had went through and some of the storytelling. And they did it most of the time. They did it live. You know, they didn't have like what I do, where I can give you four or five takes on each line and you choose which one you want to use or whatever. They had to do it all one take. It had to be perfect the first time. Otherwise, too bad, so sad. That's the way it's going out. And I really liked that aspect because I also had a lot of theater in my background. So I have a respect in that manner as well. So I started listening about the time the podcasts started coming around. People started uploading those old time radio shows. And so I was able to start listening to those as well. I wasn't real familiar with all of them until about that time. And I discovered X-1, which is a science fiction old time drama or old time radio show, which I just really loved. It's cheesy in a lot of aspects, but it's still just so much fun. But my favorite's The Whistler. And I'm looking forward to putting that into my Retro Radio Sunday sometime soon. The Whistler, it's like M. Night Shyamalan in old time radio days. You have your story, but there's always a twist at the end of every single episode. It's guaranteed. They even pronounce it or announce it that way, promote it that way within the radio show, that you're going to get a twist at the end. So you even know it's coming, and it's still sometimes a surprise. So that's really where I started getting into radio show, the old time radio shows. I made a relationship with a guy named Carl Amari. He has his own radio show called Hollywood 360, which I would definitely suggest people check out. If you like old time radio shows, that's what it is. Every Saturday, he does a 2-hour long show of a whole bunch of different kinds of old time radio shows. And he is so knowledgeable about what he does. And he happened to be working at the radio station that I was working at the time. And he was pre-recording one of his episodes because he was going to be gone. Because usually he does his shows live every Saturday night. He'll take callers. They'll play games on the air with him, stuff like that. But this time he had to pre-record it for some reason. And he needed somebody to play this game because he had to make sure that this game was in the show. And so he just pulled me from the hallway and said, "Hey, you, I don't know who you are, but come on, play this game with me." And we started talking. And I realized Carl Amari is the guy that produces the Twilight Zone radio show.
Oh, wow.
He's the guy that does that. He actually knows all of those people, you know, personally. And so I started talking with him. I said, "Hey, if you ever, I'll do it for free. I'll be a voice actor on any episode of the Twilight Zone." I don't think they're making any more of those new episodes now, which is too bad because they were doing a brilliant job with it. But he actually contacted me a few months ago saying, "Hey, I know that you're doing your podcast, and you know, you and I have talked before. Would you like to maybe add the old time radio shows?" And those are expensive. If you're listening to a podcast that is doing old time radio shows, they should be paying the copyright owner for use. Most of the time, those are not in public domain. But Carl has the copyrights. He's the one that he either owns them, or he knows who does, and he can get special permission, so there's no legal hurdles. So he came to me saying, "Hey, I'll make you a deal if you play, you know, one of these old time radio shows, and just tell people about my website where they can buy these old time radio shows, then I'll give them to you for free." It costs him, I think, between $300 and $500 every time I put up a retro radio show. Wow. But he believes in the podcast so much, in Weird Darkness so much, and loves and of course loves old time radio so much that he's willing to take this chance. So I of course said, absolutely, yes, let's do it. And then he said, great, let's do it every day. No, wait. No, this is not an old time radio show podcast. don't take me in a different direction. But adding that one per week, just that Sunday, Retro Radio Sunday, I think is enough to give people that little taste of old time radio, so long as it's still in the genre of Weird Darkness. So it still has to be like a mystery or a crime or something of the spooky, or maybe dark sci-fi, something along those lines. So it still matches the Weird Darkness feel. It's just an old time radio show that I'm introducing. And it's actually kind of nice because one of the things I like about doing Weird Darkness in general is how educational it is for me. I have to go in and research all of this stuff. Even though I'm using stuff that other people have written, I'm reading it and I'm learning. And it's just so incredibly cool, everything going on in this world. And so for the radio show, for the Retro Radio Sunday, I go out and I look online and I try to find information about this particular show, this particular episode, and I'm able to put that in there. And I had to deny it because I'm just so busy, but I even had an old time radio Facebook group approach me saying, would you be one of our experts in our group? And I said, I am thrilled that you want me, but I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff. I'm learning as I go. But that's how much people really appreciate the depth I go into to give the history, you know, before the actual show itself starts airing on Retro Radio Sunday. But I love it. We've only done, I think, four episodes now on Sundays. So it's still very, very early, but I'm hoping it takes off. The people really like it. I'm hoping Carl Amari comes back to me and says, hey man, this is really working well. You want to add another day? Just so I can tell him no. but I love doing it, and I hope it can stick around for a while, if nothing else, just because I love it.
Yeah, it's a really nice feel for a Sunday. It's got a real Sunday feel about it, actually, as well.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, Darren, though, speaking of War of the Worlds, in my other life, I'm a primary school teacher, and mm-hmm. I teach what's known as year five in England, which I think is equivalent to your grade five.
And, okay.
I started teaching them about War of the Worlds, and they absolutely love it. In fact, they love it so much that during one of our lockdowns, I ended up only teaching half of the class about War of the Worlds, and we did it for about 6 weeks. And now that we're back in school completely, the other half of the class all want to do it all over again.
Wait a minute here. You have people going to public school and your class is about War of the Worlds?
Yes.
That's a class? That's an actual course that you can take in grade school? In grammar school? I grew up in the wrong country. I should have grown up where you are. That is awesome. I love that. So are you teaching the book, or are you teaching the radio show, the movie, or are you teaching it all and how it all compares and the differences?
All of it. We started off with the radio show, mm-hmm. And then we moved on to the musical version because
I didn't know there was a musical version.
Yes, I think David Essex is in it.
I'm gonna have to find that.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really good. And they were literally mesmerized by it. And I promised them at the end of the school year, we'll watch the film as well. So that's, I'm holding that up as a carrot on a stick for the end of the year.
being a school course, are you also forcing them to read the book?
No, I'm not being that mean. Only quite young.
I would think that'd be the natural thing, that you'd show them the movie or something, or the radio show, just to kind of give them a taste and say, okay, now we're actually going to learn something here. Learn English and read this book. But no, not in Michaela's course. She doesn't care about actually reading and writing and all that other stuff. She just wants to entertain the kids. I get it.
We try to make it fun.
you sound like a great teacher. I would love to be in that class. If you ever need a voiceover guy for your class, if you ever want to do something special, you come to me. I'd be more than happy to do that for you. That would be awesome.
I certainly will. I really will. Right now, I'm going to move on to something slightly more serious.
Okay.
So,
party pooper.
Sorry. I'm sure we can get back onto the fun stuff.
Okay. All right.
throughout the whole of the time that I've listened to your podcast, I've time and time again, I've noticed that you take a lot of time to talk about and also raise money for mental health awareness, particularly depression. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if you'd like to tell our listeners a little bit about this area of your work and why it's so important to you.
Well, one reason, excuse me, I should never do an interview right after eating Burger King. One of the reasons that it's important to me is because I am a sufferer. I'm somebody who, I didn't realize it when I was growing up, but I'm somebody who actually has depression. If I had known back then, and if doctors really knew much more back then, I'm 52 years old. So, you know, it's been a while since I've been in grade school, but it's something that really affects people and they don't talk about it. It's one of those closet illnesses, I guess, for lack of better words. I mean, it's so easy to go up to somebody and say, hey, I was just diagnosed with cancer. But if it's a mental illness of any kind, people suddenly treat themselves like lepers. Others aren't treating you that way. If you tell them, if I tell somebody that I'm schizophrenic, I'm not, but if I had schizophrenia and I told somebody, they wouldn't treat me like I'm an outcast or anything. They'd say, oh, wow, you know what? That explains a couple of things about you. And, you know, how can we help you, or how can we communicate with you better or make your life easier? But no, those of us who have these illnesses, we think that we're lepers. We think that we have to keep it a secret for some reason and suffer in silence. And that's what we do. And in the process, especially those who suffer from depression, that gets, well, it's schizophrenia and pretty much any other mental illness, now that I think about it, it just gets worse and worse the more you keep it to yourselves. People wonder what's wrong with you, but you're not open enough to tell them that you're struggling. Even if you don't know that you specifically have depression or schizophrenia, you should be telling somebody, hey, I'm dealing with this particular issue. I don't know what it is, why it's happening, but I'm pretty sure it's not normal. You know, go to a doctor or talk to a family member who can maybe get you help. It really needs to be more open to discussion. And I don't know why we do that to ourselves, but we do. So I started talking about it because Weird Darkness has such dark content, and there's so much death in so much of it. And I know that people who like the dark stuff are also going to be more apt, or actually, let me reverse that. People who suffer from depression are going to be more apt to gravitate towards dark entertainment. Yeah. And so knowing that, and it was just a guess in the beginning, I didn't really do any research or anything, but all I did at the very beginning was I just put like a 30 second or a 60 second public service announcement, you know, and it's saying, hey, if you're struggling with depression, thoughts of suicide, here's the suicide prevention hotline. That's all it started with. And I ended up getting emails from people saying, thank you so much for including that, because I know somebody who has struggled, or I struggle, and I was wondering who I could call. Even though you'd think it'd be so easy for that information to be out there for people to find, they don't. And so coming from a podcaster they listen to all the time, they tend to believe you. They tend to put their trust in you, which is a huge responsibility and a burden. And I don't take that lightly. And when I'm getting emails like that, I know, okay, if I get one email from somebody, I know that there's at least another 100 out there who are not emailing me, because most people aren't going to. Like going to a restaurant, you might tell somebody if they hate the meal, you'll tell the manager. If you liked your meal, you're not calling a manager over to tell them. You're just going home, and you might come back for another meal later. You hear the negativity, but you don't hear the positivity. So if somebody's emailing me with one positive message saying, thank you for this suicide PSA, I know that there are others out there that are hearing it. And being somebody that suffered from depression, which by the time I started doing the podcast, I had been diagnosed with depression. Diapression? What the heck is that? It's a dietitian that has depression. Diapression. But I had already been diagnosed, so I actually knew what the symptoms were, or at least for me, and so I knew how I was handling it. And I started looking online and I found that there was really nowhere that was specifically targeting depression. If you looked online saying help for depression, it always took you to a website about schizophrenia or about suicide or something like that. But there was no websites specifically for depression. And I thought no wonder we're not talking about it. I mean, not even the web is talking about it. But I finally, after about a year, I think, of occasionally going online and searching, I finally found IFRED, the International Foundation for Research and Education on Depression, which is why they call it IFRED, because that's a mouthful. But they specifically do concentrate on depression. That's what they do. They're not counselors. Then, I mean, you don't call them when you're in a crisis situation. They have those resources on their website. If you're in a crisis, they have those numbers that you can call. But the organization itself is specifically trying to find out what causes depression, how it can be treated. And that's so important because not everybody is going to get diagnosed by a doctor. Not everybody can get the meds. Not all doctors even want to prescribe meds for depression. There are still doctors who don't really understand or want to deal with depression, I guess. I was very lucky in that I found a couple of doctors that do. So I started advertising IFRED, and I just wanted to let people know that they were out there. And then I found they mentioned, I was talking to the president of IFRED, and she mentioned 7Cups. And 7Cups is an app. It's actually a website or an app, 7cups.com, or just go to your, I'm sorry, excuse me. Either go to 7cups.com or you can go to your Apple store or your Google Play store and download the 7Cups app. And you can there speak with people who do deal with depression, you're either in a group talking with others who suffer, or there are people there who have been through it and can walk you through what needs to happen next, or just somebody to talk to. That's what I was looking for so long that it was like a hidden gem that nobody was telling anybody about online. And so I started telling people about that. And that, of course, just made the emails come in more and more about people saying, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. I lost my daughter last week to this, and I wish I had known about this beforehand. Some heartbreaking stories. So at that point, I realized we need to do something more. Not only do I need to make sure that people know about these resources, which I do in the podcast now and also on the website, but these people need money to continue thriving. And if people don't know about them, then they're not going to give to them, because these are all nonprofit organizations. That's why I started doing the fundraising. I started doing the fundraising with just the yearly live stream on Halloween, October 31st, doing the actual live podcast, actual live video stream. But I realized that wasn't enough. And so now I just donate everything that I make in the Weird Darkness store, whatever profits that come to me, which aren't a lot from every sale, but still every little bit helps. So whatever comes to me from the store, I donate to one of those organizations each month, and I just rotate them. So they all get a little piece of the pie, you know, throughout the year. And very soon, I haven't mentioned it yet or announced it yet, but very soon I am planning on making all the proceeds from Weird Dark Roast Coffee do the same thing. It's because I really want to be able to give a little bit more, and I'm just not seeing as much from the Weird Darkness store as I would like. I think everybody who wanted to buy a t-shirt has bought a t-shirt, and now they don't want to buy t-shirts anymore. So, but coffee, you're always drinking coffee.
Yeah. So how did the coffee thing start?
I love coffee, and I just always wanted a coffee. That was mine. It was pure ego. That's all it was. It was just a branding thing. I thought it'd be great to have my own coffee, and somehow it popped into my head once, Weird Dark Roast. And I thought, oh, that's kind of a clever play on words. I wonder if I actually can get somebody to make coffee for me. And then I just started going online, looking around for people until I found one. And they said, hey, that sounds like a great idea. We work with other people that kind of do the same thing. So if you are watching a TV show that has their own coffee, or you're listening to a radio show or a podcast or something that has their own brand of coffee, it's kind of the thing that I went through. I'm not brewing my own coffee. What I'm doing is I'm going to an outside roaster
Yeah.
They're doing it for me, but I said, hey, like, here's kind of what I like in my coffee. I don't like it too strong. You know, I don't like that burnt. But I do like it strong, but not to that level. I really like putting, either chocolate flavoring in my coffee, or sometimes I'll put Kahlua in my coffee or whatever. I like that dessert style.
Yeah.
And so they're the ones that said, hey, you know what, here's something that you ought to try. And they sent me, what they thought would be good for Weird Dark Roast Coffee, which was what it is now. There's just a tiny hint of chocolate flavor into it. Just a little bit of caramel in there. Not enough to make it sweet, but because if you're drinking it black, you can still taste it. There looks like on the, just sort of like that aftertaste. It's like, hey, is that chocolate caramel? What is that? But I loved it. And I said, yeah, let's do this. How do I do it? And they set it up for me. So it really was, like I said, it was just an ego thing. But now that it's there, and I don't make a lot of money from that either, so I'm not somebody really special because I'm giving the profits away. I'm hoping that it'll be really big as the podcast grows, and as we maybe move into radio, which we're kind of talking about, as more people hear about it, I would love for that to really grow and be able to support these organizations that do help people that struggle with depression.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Just going back to the live stream, I remember the first one that I watched, and you were sat outside the front of your house.
Oh, what a disaster that was.
And all the Halloweeners were constantly walking in front of your camera, but I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was fascinating.
Well, thank you. I'm hoping we can do that again this year. That first year was a train wreck. I'd never done a live stream like that. You know, everybody can go on YouTube for a couple of minutes and do a live stream when you're in your office or something. But when you're outside trying to set it up with a phone camera from a few feet away, but you have to have the mic on you in order to pick that up. Trying to read a script from a computer. I had never done any of that before. I had no idea what I was doing. I worked for weeks trying to set it up, trying to figure out how it even technically worked so I could do it. And once we started, I think at least twice, you know what, you could actually find, I hate the recording, but I kept it anyway. It's on the website, weirddarkness.com. If you go to podcasts, and then there's a drop-down box for live stream, you can click on that and you can see all the past live streams we've done. So you can see the first one, but the audio drops out at a couple of moments in the recording. But I didn't know that. I don't have headphones on listening to myself. I'm still talking about this witch and how everything happened. And I had to get a text from my mom who texted my bride to say, I can't hear Darren. My mom doesn't like the content that I create. It's not really her cup of tea, but she loves her son. So she watches and listens sometimes anyway. She's definitely a member of our Facebook group. She's always in there posting and stuff. But so she's listening to my live stream, and suddenly the audio goes out. And when she realizes after about 60 seconds that it's not coming back, she texts my bride. So Robin comes running over and says, hey, nobody can hear you. I have no idea how long it's been since the audio went out. So I thought, do I start over with that story? But if I do, then somebody might be hearing it twice. If it really, forget it. I'm just going to skip that story, move on. And then it happened again a few minutes later. So I think towards the end, I think it was either that year or the year after, the phone died on me, because I didn't even think about the fact that the battery on the phone might actually go out. So you plug in your phone, you idiot. But no, I didn't do that. So towards the end, it just cuts off. It's just like, there is no official end. It just ended. But the aspect I loved about that, and we did do it on purpose. You mentioned the trick-or-treaters stepping in front of the camera. I did that on purpose. People have asked me, why don't you go out on tour? Why don't you go out and, you know, like, do a Weird Darkness tour? It's like, why would anybody want to come see me at a theater, just sitting on stage reading from a script? That sounds like the most boring thing ever. But people do it. Podcasts are out doing that. But that just didn't seem like a good idea for me. But if I'm doing a live stream, give them something to see. And what our favorite part about Halloween, Robin and I, is seeing the costumes that the kids show up in. And it's always something cool. Usually there's a lot of current event themed stuff. Like back in 2000, kids would show up with these weird bug antennas and a big giant 2K on the front of them. What are you dressed as? I'm a Y2K bug. So stuff like that. And I thought, well, why not let others see the same thing that we see? So as I was telling the stories, I thought it'd be great. Even if it would even be fun if they interrupted me and I was bantering back and forth with them, which happened quite a bit during that first year. Mm-hmm. And I had fun with it that way because I like bantering back and forth with strangers who come up and say, so what the heck's going on here? As soon as you told those kids that they were on TV, video or whatever, but as soon as you told them they were being, you know, videoed or whatever, they immediately went into ham mode. And, you know, they were dancing and saying, hey, hi, mom. And you got to see a really close up on their costumes. The year after that, we had snow, so we couldn't do it outside. So the next year I was doing it in my living room, and we tried to set it up where you could see the trick-or-treaters behind me as I was talking to the camera, but it didn't quite work the way we were hoping it would. Last year it was, well, last year it was the pandemic. So we weren't going to get any trick-or-treaters at all. Mm. So last year I just created sort of a little studio, YouTube studio. And it was the first year that actually I had no glitches. I've always had the audio glitches in years past. This time it actually went off without a hitch. But I tried to make it as visually appealing as possible by throwing up graphics on the screen and stuff like that. I had to get past my learning curve to do that. But this year, now that the pandemic's over, we're praying for great weather because I really do want to go outside again, see the trick-or-treaters, have the weirdo listeners or viewers, actually, in this case, have them see the trick-or-treaters and me bantering back and forth with them, because I got so many comments about that aspect of it. They really liked me talking with other people, because then suddenly I became a real person, not this floating voice. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm hoping to do that again. So I had not announced that to anybody now. So you're the first person that I've told. So way to go, Michaela. You get an exclusive.
Woohoo! Fantastic.
So yeah, let's just hope we have really nice weather that day.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And hopefully all the restrictions are lifted and we can just be normal and have a good Halloween together.
Amen.
Yeah, definitely. So my final question to you is, at the end of your podcast you often read a passage or quote from the Bible. How did you manage to reconcile your faith with your interest in the paranormal? Did you find it difficult, or did you find a way through quite easily?
Well, I realize that everybody listening are devilish heathens and need to repent and give their lives to God, or they burn in hell. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
No, short answer.
Gosh, it's suddenly now everybody has turned off your show. No, I'm kidding, folks. I'm kidding. Yes, that actually did cross my mind. And I've had a lot of Christians actually who have come to me and asked that very question, because they want to know, how does this coincide with your faith? I mean, I thought you were a Christian, so why do you like all of this weird stuff? Well, the Bible actually has ghosts, witches, and monsters. It's just that nobody ever talks about them. So I'm not really that far off base here. Like there's in the Old Testament, there's Leviathan, which is a sea monster. There's Behemoth, which is a land creature. The way it's described, you would think it's like a dinosaur, like a Brachiosaurus. Who knows what it really was, but I would call that a monster. There are witches in the Bible, specifically the Witch of Endor. If nobody knows the story, it's in 1 Samuel. I actually had to look this up because I wanted to be prepared for that kind of question. This always comes up. The first book of Samuel, 1 Samuel 28. But it's the Witch of Endor. That's the Old Testament. Saul wants to summon the spirit, ghost, of a prophet, Samuel, to receive advice on going into battle. So you actually have a ghost right there too in that story. But even Jesus himself mentioned ghosts in the book of Luke. He said, "Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones, as you see I have." So even Jesus, in a way, says, yeah, ghosts exist, but I'm not one. So the Bible actually does, you know, say, yeah, ghosts are real. In fact, the disciples saw Jesus walking on the water. We're all familiar with that story. But what they yelled is, "It's a ghost." They actually thought Jesus was a ghost walking towards them. So twice in a story about Jesus in the New Testament, not the Old Testament, you still have a ghost being mentioned. So I really don't think I'm really far from my faith. What I am careful to avoid, however, is endorsing or recommending certain things that would be dangerous for someone's soul. So you'll hear me talking about a Ouija board, and I'll say in the story, by the way, you will never find me playing with one. Mm-hmm. I won't allow one in my house. I'm not going, if you want to go and talk to a psychic or something, that's your business, but I wouldn't, because it's against my faith. That doesn't stop me from talking about the fact that they're out there, or, or that they're interesting to have the stories that are attached to them, I think are interesting, just like serial killers. I'm not saying you should go out and be a serial killer, but I'll tell the story about a serial killer. There's that line. I'm not endorsing, I'm not promoting, I'm just telling the story about that particular subject. If you ever, this is for anybody listening to your podcast, or if they happen to be a Weird Darkness listener, if you ever hear me endorsing something like that, suggesting somebody does it, let me know, because then I have become a hypocrite. And I don't want to be, and I don't want to put anybody in danger either. And I do believe there are dangerous things that people need to avoid. But I also want to share my faith. I want people to know that there's hope out there. Again, it probably goes a little bit with the depression thing. But, and I'm not going to say that finding Jesus is going to cure your depression or schizophrenia. It might, but that would be very rare. That's what we call a miracle. And they're miracles because they don't happen often. Most of the time, you're going to find God or whatever, and that'll give you the motivation to get your life turned around, which is what happened with me. And I hope that that'll happen with those who listen to the podcast. It's so dark throughout the entire episode. And that's why I say, and now that we're coming out of the dark, I leave you with a little light. I want people to just have a little bit of a lift before they walk on their day. I don't want to leave them on a downer note. Because not everybody is going to continue on with the next episode and keep on listening. A lot of people have a life and that they have to get to. And I don't want to leave them, you know, depressed at the end. I want to show them there is hope, that somebody does love you, whether or not you believe it or not. I love you. Others love you. God loves you. And if you don't believe it, that doesn't change the fact that it's real, that it's true. Yeah. So some people have complained. But if you listen to a 60-minute podcast and you have difficulty with 20 seconds at the very end after all the stories have been told, that's your problem, not mine. If you're that anti-God, then you really need to see somebody about your heart, because that's not healthy. Even if you don't want to believe in God, and that's fine. I have atheist friends. That's totally cool if they want to believe that way. We may not agree religiously, spiritually, but I still love them as human beings. But if you're so angry about against God, any mention of God, then there's something wrong that you need to fix in your own heart. So, but I want to share my faith just in that little bit, and just give people a little bit of hope as we step away from the show.
Yeah, and allow them to open up to the possibilities.
Now, if you would all please turn to page 34 in your hymnals, we will be singing How Great Thou Art.
Oh, thank you so much. I am going to say finally, now that we've come to the end of the interview, which has just been fantastic, Would you please let the listeners know where they can find your podcast, your webpage, contact details, etc.?
Sure. We made it very easy because I'm an idiot and I needed to be able to remember it. The podcast is called Weird Darkness. So that's the website, weirddarkness.com. And I think we've pretty much covered everywhere you can listen to a podcast. We're there. Spreaker is my hosting platform. They've done a pretty good job of making sure that you can hear it on iTunes. Well, excuse me, Apple Podcasts now, or on your I'm trying not to say her name so she doesn't come up, your Amazon speaker, your Google Home device, I say iHeartRadio, there's TuneIn, Spotify, Pocket Casts or Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts or wherever you can listen to podcasts, you will find Weird Darkness. So just open up your podcast app on your phone or device, wherever you're listening, and just type in Weird Darkness. You will find it. It's there. If it's not, let me know and I'll make sure it gets there soon. But I think we've pretty much covered the entire planet.
And that's how it should be.
That's definitely the way. That's what you want.
You've been absolutely fantastic, Darren. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming to me and having me be a part of the magazine. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Darren. That was really good. I enjoyed listening to that again, and I hope you did too. And I think we really, really must get Darren back on the podcast. So next week, we have another very interesting person, but I'm going to keep that one a secret just to see if it all turns out as well as I hope it will. So I hope you have a fantastic week. I'm going on a ghost hunt this weekend with my friend Paramike and Patsy, and we are going to a haunted theatre in Portsea near Portsmouth, so I'll tell you all about that next week. So that's me on Saturday night. I hope you're doing something really spooky over the weekend, and don't forget to get your sun cream on as well, because it's meant to be really, really hot here in the UK. Well, hot for me, maybe even 22 degrees, so you never know. Don't forget to send me your paranormal experiences to paranormalorwhatpodcast@outlook.com. That's paranormalorwhatpodcast@outlook.com. And don't forget to check out my website. I now have a website. So you just need to look up paranormalorwhatpodcast.com. Yeah, I managed to get the whole name. And over the next few weeks and months, I will be uploading all the podcasts on there, and I will hopefully getting a link to Paranormality Magazine, who I write articles for. And so you'll be able to see all sorts of stuff on there, including investigations that I go on meanwhile, silly photos and all that sort of stuff. So enjoy yourselves, everybody. Enjoy the sun and take care. And I'll see you, or at least speak to you, next week. And don't forget, together we can figure things out. Night.